Have you ever thought about how prevalent superheroes are in our pop culture? Whether that be an advertisement for a cereal or a moving company or even an insurance bidder, superheroes seem to be a pillar of American advertising, as well as American pop culture. Do you have a favorite superhero? Do you like the superhero stories? Welcome back to Have No Fear. Last time we were able to look at feedback and other dirty words as a referent for communication apprehension discourse within self-help. This week, this chapter, we will get to identify and examine Fearless Speaking by Jerry Guinard, his 2014 publication, as well as the advertising material around it, and a brief look into what implications there are for this title. Within the next few minutes, we are going to talk about themes of villainy, as well as absolutism, and a little about energetic change and how these themes are prevalent throughout this text and what ideologies they reinforce.
Gary Ginard's book, Fearless Speaking, is a great example of using cultural icons throughout advertising techniques to create an atmosphere of knowledge and familiarity. Within his book, I'm able to recognize three major themes. First, villainy. The reason that villain and superhero dichotomy is brought to the forefront of conversation with this book is the choice of front cover. Its pop art style features a collective of individuals looking off screen, fearful. It looks a lot like what you would see in a comic book. With the name Fearless Speaking and the comic book-esque style, we can start looking and seeing how this author views speaking. He views it as something to be scared of, for one. And if we start thinking a little harder about his choice in the pop art, you could argue that he sees it as a villain. Now, at the beginning, framing communication apprehension as a villain might not seem very detrimental. However, if we start thinking about the implications of such framing and the assumptions that go along with such framing, we can start seeing some themes that are not necessarily what we want to be endorsing ideologically. So first, let's break down what a villain could be. Villains often have one counterpart that they're matched up to, the superhero. Villains are often intentional or intentionally being a villain. They also are seen from the society as something that you do not want to engage with. And they also imply some sort of power because a supervillain isn't just going to be someone who's annoying or mean. If they need a superhero, they're going to have an excessive amount of sway over the conversations that they are trying to engage in. So let's bring it back to this book. Using the idea of communication apprehension and the fear of speaking when related to a villain, you can see it's an intentional choice to engage with this interlocutor because you, as an individual who are buying into this book, see it as, and it is framed as, the superhero to the villain. The villain is communication apprehension. This book is a superhero. But with those framings, villains are seen as social pariahs. seen as something bad in the society. Villains are often not given the opportunity to reform. They're just locked away. They're not given the opportunity to grow. They're just shut out. And that is telling in how they're framing this book. Because with their framing of social pariah, with their framing of intentionality and power, they're also framing apprehension in those same terms. It is larger than you can control. You have to go out and get someone or something to address this problem. You have to find a superhero. And this book is marketing itself as that hero. To go back over the villainy aspect of the choices within this book. Culturally, we identify supervillains and superheroes as parts of how we understand and accept our identity. When this author frames communication apprehension as a villain, they are endorsing the idea that there is intentionality, there's pariah, there's power, and there's the idea that you need to find someone else to fix it. Also, the idea of the superhero being the solution can be extended into our next theme of absolutism. This book uses terms like forever, eliminate, permanently, halt, solution. All of these terms and all of these choices in reviews create an atmosphere of absolutism. This is the one and only solution. This is the solution everyone needs. That solution aspect and the one and done aspect is not dissuaded until the very back of the book and the last two lines in the preface. Another aspect of this book that feeds into the absolutism argument is that he forefronts a quantitative quiz about communication apprehension. Up front, you start this book, and he immediately gives you a number that you are supposed to be using this book to fix. That absolute creates false knowledge around communication apprehension. Finally, energetic change. I've discussed how they use absolute terms like forever, eliminate, permanently. Using those also feeds into its verb for change. This book is supposed to excite the audience. It looks at a problem or a market and tries to catch their attention with the color choice, with the cultural references. They try to instigate energetic change in ways he frames his preface as well as the amount of exercises he's added in. He also, in the very back, has a full 2 pages dedicated to his online method. Another thing that you can go by, because he wants you to be invigorated by the knowledge in this book, so you'll go pay more money for more of his stuff. This energetic change that they try to foster doesn't just stop at this book. And that is one specific reason why I argue that this book is a prototypical example of a communication apprehension book. Because for the time period it was released, they also released the first chapter online in digital form. All of the advertisement went around and advertised that you could start without even having to purchase. You could start this complete change of your life. You can beat your anxiety, build your confidence, change your life for free. You can start right now. And all of that energy that they try to push into this book comes out as an ideology. This ideology is the energetic change, the excitement towards a different existence. If we want to pull back to what we know about self-help, we understand that self-help originally was person to person, then it grew larger from person to group, then it talked more about groups working with groups, and then in the 80s, especially in American culture, self-help changed from we are all going to be invigorated to solve this problem to you need to solve your problem with this book as a solution. And that is exemplified by the choice in marketing of releasing the full chapter, releasing the myriad of different posters using a brightly colored cultural reference as the cover. All of this works together to reinforce that ideology that this book is absolutely the solution. It is energizing and it wants you to be excited to make these changes. And it also frames communication apprehension as the villain, as the thing that needs to get changed.
What do you associate with when I say superhero?
Supervillain imply a superhero, right? Superhero is a really, really common in our culture because of the comic book presence, the pop culture that reinforces our knowledge and our awareness of the superhero story. What are some common themes that we find within superhero stories? In specific, looking at the villains. In classic superhero stories, the villain gets beaten up and thrown in jail. The villain is seen as a pariah. The villain is seen as something that causes a problem in the normal society, as well as something to be feared and avoided. A villain is something to be saved from, and a villain often engages in a power struggle with the superhero or the culture. The superhero is often framed as more powerful than the villain. With all of these implied ideologies and feelings towards the idea of a villain, what could we be importing? We can look directly back at this text and its choice in cover art to create the argument that it is framing CA as a supervillain, importing the ideas that it is something to be feared, something that needs to be conquered, something that directly deals with power, as well as something that is an intentional act. Now, what happens when you frame a skill that is fundamental to our culture as something to be scared of, something that needs a hero, something that needs and is intentional? The rhetor imports all of those ideas, emotions, and ideologies, and puts it onto the fear of a skill that is culturally important, focusing back on the idea that it needs a savior or a superhero to come and address it. This reinforces his previous ideas that communication apprehension, or the fear of speaking in general, will need to be addressed by a specific intervention. It frames itself as taking all of the power away from you as the participant. A third party needs to come in and address this thing that is framed as bad and needs to be intervened upon. Framing CA as a supervillain in reference to our pop culture knowledge of superheroes, it imports ideas of needing a savior into our conversations of communication apprehension. No longer the individual who is suffering from the problem, the villain, can address the problem. They need a third party, someone with more power and more knowledge to address it, taking all initiative and action out of the reader's hands. Additionally, a recurring theme I was able to identify within Fearless Speaking is absolutes. He continuously uses terms that create the illusion of one and done. They are complete. They are no longer going to have to need to be addressed. Using these terms creates an argument that communication apprehension interventions are complete at any point. This goes against what we understand as researchers. We understand that it is a constant, continuous process to work with something such as communication apprehension. It is not a one and done. And this false narrative they endorse ideologically can dissuade individuals from continuously working on their skill, as well as it also creates the idea that if you don't conquer your fear because of this book, you did it wrong. Earlier, we talked about it framing communication apprehension as something that needs an intervention from a third party. This absolute and the way this ideologically is framed, the absolute solution can be something that is not achieved and causes the individual who was trying to achieve it to feel like it's their fault, disenchanting them with further interventions, showing that this book is the absolute number one thing you need to do to conquer this problem does not address all of the inequities that an individual might face. It also gives a blanket response to something that is diverse and complex. When advertising as a one and done, and then when an individual who is bought into that ideology and fails, they can become disenchanted with the idea of fixing it. They start blaming themselves for something that we know is a constant process. Additionally, the quiz reinforces these absolutes. This book fronts a quantitative quiz over types of communication apprehension, focusing specifically within the domain of public speaking. This quiz focuses on a quantitative number that you can say, I have X amount of communication apprehension or fear of public speaking. Forefronting that quiz with a quantitative response also points to the absolutes. There is no chance you do not need this book. It is upfront. You are going to have a number to point to saying that you need this book. Additionally, the way it's advertised, passing out the first chapter as a marketing tool, reinforces the absolute of this book. The front chapter is where it talks continuously about the goals of the book and the book being the solution to your problem, the thing to help you conquer. This is where a large chunk of these absolute terms are found in the preface and in this first chapter. This book sets itself up as the absolute perfect, prototypical example of communication apprehension. We also know from past research around communication apprehension, when talking about this fear as absolutes, you encourage and increase individuals who already have that fear. Additionally, exposing individuals who had not contemplated the framing to disenchant themselves. Not referencing the systematic problems or the caveats of the conversation around race, gender, class, power, all of the conversations that this book doesn't address, because of its absolute framing, it tries to market itself as a blanket response, giving the reader a false hope. Once that hope is dashed, as we see in some of this research around communication apprehension, individuals are less likely to seek interventions in the future if it was framed as a complete solution. Now, we've gone over the types of arguments for absolutism as an ideological theme that I have located within this book. Next, we are going to migrate towards my next point of energetic change. This book continuously talks about hope for a difference, this excitement towards a difference, pulling back and understanding that we framed self-help as person to person, and then it transitioned to a large group. We talk more about our groups working together from the 80s. Now we have the jungle culture. All of this cultivated in an optimism and energy that self-help tries to, and this energetic change feeds right into that conversation. They are trying to encourage and engage readers to be aware of their current practices, as well as encourage them towards a different set of practices. This can be seen very clearly in the review choices of this book. Individuals praise how they have changed because of this book, and they have also continuously encouraged you as a prospective reader of their review, and fundamentally nodded towards encouraging of the cultural change that these ideas are trying to push towards. This energetic change is a hope and a goal aspect towards the ideologies within this text. Energetic change can also be seen thematically because and throughout the titles and the amount of exercises he has embedded within this book. In the table of contents, you can see how many and how often he has inserted exercises into this content, trying to invoke self-meditation as well as goal setting and actionable change. Another place that we can find the argument of energetic change is using the subtitles and the taglines: beat your anxiety, change your life, build your confidence. You can see these goal-oriented change statements, and all the goals they point to are something they are trying to be excited to change.
As someone who has been told countless times that reading is easy, and cold reading specifically is a skill that everyone should develop at a young age, the overall themes that fearless speaking allude to hit my emotional processes very significantly. I have a history of being told something should be easy and it not be. And when that happens, it's discouraging. Many interventions I have been allowed to partake in use pop culture and references to media as a way to try to engage with the audience. And Fearless Speaking's allusion to superheroes remind me viscerally of failed attempts to make interventions fun, savvy, and hip. These allusions to "don't be scared, it's just" has not only harmed me in my past, but has harmed individuals who I have had the privilege of interacting with, as well as harmed individuals that I unknowingly imported these ideologies that I had been fed for years onto them. Within my research, I have become more aware of my impact and my choices around communication apprehension. And Fearless Speaking, with its reference to pop culture, as well as its importation of "it's just" ideals, has not only affected me and my growth, but it has also been something that I have unwittingly passed on to others. That's one reason I think that this project is extremely important, because the ideologies and internal overt, covert messages that we take in, we put out. And if we do not understand the detriment and or the implications around these ideologies, we can be unwillingly and unwittingly progressing fear and ableism within our interactions. Teaching has allowed me to see that my barriers are not the only ones, and has allowed me to try to intervene when others' ideologies and cognitive processes are becoming more of an issue than intended, or becoming more of an issue than aid. Today, we had the opportunity to analyze and interpret Fearless Speaking by Gary Jannard. We were able to see some of the reoccurring themes, as well as situate those themes within the larger ideology of communication apprehension and self-help. Next time, we are going to take the arguments that we have cultivated from the past 3 episodes and put them together to create an overall understanding and interpretation of the discourse within self-help and communication apprehension. Before I go, though, I want to have us think back to that superhero. Now that you see how superheroes can be used as means for communication, will you look at superheroes in a different way? Will you be able to identify superhero themes or traits in other aspects of our culture? Hopefully, This conversation has opened your mind up to understanding and observing what themes or ideas that not only superheroes, but self-help overall can embody in our day-to-day influences and culture.